We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
First pick in the 1991 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Larry Johnson from University.
I'm not supposed to be here, man. A lot of people from where I'm from, you know, don't make it.
Charlotte, we're back.
All right, welcome back to another BuzzBeat, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie, and we're live on Twitter Spaces here this Sunday morning. And I am joined by Spencer and Brian. And as we get into this, I wanted you guys to remind you guys about the latest episode that we had. We had the opportunity to interview Eddie Robinson. He shared some pretty cool stories. And I even had to cut out some of the questions because he gave such detail with some of those answers. So you never really know when you invite someone on like that how detailed they're going to be. But he was an awesome interview. Spencer, saw on your Instagram you went fishing recently. Where was that at?
Yeah, that was down like in between Kiowa Island and Folly Beach. Was down there with my wife's family last week. It was awesome. Went out in the morning, little half day, no kid. So was able to really focus on the fishing. Got some sea trout, some sheep's head. We were going for redfish, like big redfish. We got two medium size, but no big boys. And saw some bonnethead shark. We're trying to get some of those, but weren't able to pull some up. But I love that area, man. The low country of South Carolina is, you know, I mean, all the Carolinas, you know, there's plenty of, you know, great beaches, coastal areas, but I think like greater Charleston area, low country, South Carolina is my favorite. So it was a good trip.
Yeah. I'm not a big fisher. Is there skill to it? Or am I just like crazy and thinking that it's just like mostly luck?
So like, I think if you go offshore, it's more, I would say there's less skill to it. It's like when you hook the fish, just it's like endurance. Like you're going to have to fight that fish for a while. We were, you know, fishing in the river. So there is more skill to that. You know, you're casting like in between oyster beds. And as soon as that bait hits, that fish will grab it and go. So it's like how you set the hook, you know, how you keep tension in your line, you know, with the current in the river. There's definitely more skill to that. I've probably lost everybody, so I digress. But you asked me a question. I'm really interested. I love fishing. I'm interested in this stuff, so I could do a whole episode on it, Richie.
No, I've never been a big fisher. Brian, what about you?
Well, first off, I am not a big fisher, though it did become like a pandemic activity with some buddies because it was like a way the first year of the pandemic to actually like be outside and still do something. Mm-hmm. And it was like an excuse to get outside and like drink beers and yeah, I don't know, talk shit with one another. So, but I'm terrible. I'm doing pretty well, man. It's been a nice, you know, off season. Good to kind of relax a little bit. It's that time of the year where I get back into baseball and get back into the Premier League as well as that started up. Richie, your Arsenal Gunners are looking pretty good to start here these days. And I've got a couple trips planned for September where I'll be headed back out west to Colorado a couple of times, which is a place that I'm quite fond of, sort of similar to Spencer with the low country of SC. So headed out to Colorado twice in September, and I'm really looking forward to that.
All right, so here's the rundown of what we're going to do today. We're going to take a look at the Hornets schedule, go through a thought exercise as well, where we're going to like protect players in a hypothetical expansion draft, if that were to ever come true. And then with this being Twitter Spaces, we can treat this as an open mic for anyone that is wanting to speak or has a question as well. So the NBA schedule was released a few days ago, and here we are to overanalyze the 82 games. I really never understood the fascination with, you know, people obsessing over the schedule, because you know you're getting four games against your divisional opponents. You're getting three or four games against those other Eastern Conference teams, and then you get two games of those teams out west. But here we go. Quick notes for the Hornets. They open the season on the road in San Antonio on Wednesday, October 19th. And then the home opener is 2 days later at home against the Pelicans. They do have three televised games either by ESPN or TNT. I think two games against Chicago and one game against Boston, if I'm not mistaken. Their longest home stretch is in the middle of March with five straight games. And their longest stretch of road games is in late December with six games. And that's that West Coast swing that they typically do. Yeah. So last note, too, before I kind of give my takeaways on this schedule, Hornets have 12 back-to-backs, which is, I think, tied for the lowest, which is somewhat unheard of. I feel like the Hornets typically are up in the upper tier of back-to-backs. Here are my takeaways. I like them doing a West Coast trip earlier than like the New Year's. I think they even got it over earlier last year than they did this year. But just having it in December versus March or April, where the fatigue and the injuries start to pile up, where that could put them at a bigger disadvantage. I do like them getting that West Coast swing in mid-December over. And then I guess one last quick takeaway before I pass it over to Spencer. On paper, I mean, I guess this is really what it is at this point. The schedule on paper gets more difficult as the season progresses. So I always think about the trade deadline approach when it comes to the schedule. That's really the only thing that I kind of focus on a little bit more than something else. I think Clifford's propensity to win and compete, and then like Kupchak's message about trying to be more competitive, and obviously firing Borrego, kind of signals that this organization is getting a little bit impatient in terms of how they want to approach this season. So I guess what I'm getting at is if the team is in the hunt, so to speak, earlier on because their games are easier, would that change their approach where they wouldn't, you know, be a seller at the deadline? I would hope that, you know, necessarily wouldn't be the case. And I'm not saying that they are going to be in the hunt, but because their schedule picks up after the All-Star break, who knows? Maybe that can kind of change the way that they approach the trade deadline. So Spencer, any thoughts on this schedule?
Yeah. I mean, you laid it out pretty good there. You know, in terms of national TV games, I think pretty similar to what we're used to, right? It's nice to see that we have like two ESPN games that are, well, one's early season. The other, yeah, I guess, is around the All-Star break. Usually you see this team with like that flex, you know, late season, April ESPN game, where they could flex us out if they need to, but like, okay, here's your token national TV game, Charlotte. So nice to see a few on ESPN a little earlier in the year. We got a TNT game in January with Chicago. And then, you know, your bevy of NBA TV appearances. I like to look at schedules like bookend them, you know, kind of picking up where you left off. You know, it does get tougher after the All-Star break, Richie, but if I'm eyeing this right, it looks like 10 of the last 14 are at home for Charlotte. Mm-hmm. On the schedule, which I like. You know, I would imagine with 14 games to go that they'll at least be in the play-in hunt. So, you know, that gives them a chance to make up some ground towards the end. Four of the first five for Charlotte are on the road. So that should be interesting to see how this team gets out of the gates. Yeah. And then you talked about the West Coast trip. You know, it's in December. It's not late in the season or super early in the season, which I think can have an effect on teams. I actually think like if you're an East Coast team or a West Coast team and you're you know, your opposite coast trip is early in the year, it presents a big opportunity, but it can also put you way behind the eight ball. So I like to see that that's kind of in the middle of this team's schedule. Other than that, you know, not really a lot here, you know, now yeah. We got to go throw the ball up and play.
I guess just looking at the month of January, looking at it right now as this like little PDF that I've downloaded, they've got two little stretches of four straight games on the road, Milwaukee, Indiana, Toronto, and then Houston, Atlanta, Utah, Phoenix. So looking at the months there, January does seem like a difficult month just because it's road heavy, I guess, more so than anything. So maybe that kind of goes against my other point about it being easier before the trade deadline. Maybe that month right there kind of does them in. So Brian, thoughts on the schedule? Do you like to overanalyze this? Should we go game by game and just say win, loss, win, loss, win?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I think the listeners would love 82 predictions. We can even get, you know, delve into preseason if we want to. But yeah, no, I think that stretch, I mean, you guys, Richie and Spencer, you both just touched on it. Like the West Coast trip taking place in late January. And that's the trip that for just even going back to when Steve Clifford was the coach of the Hornets was like always a house of horrors for the team. So going from that, and then when the calendar flips to 2023, I mean, New Year's Eve, you're playing your home to Brooklyn. Who knows what the Nets look like at that point. But then the Lakers, Memphis at Milwaukee, Pacers, I mean, they could be tanking by that point. Back to back against Toronto,
yeah.
In Toronto, then back to back against Boston. Like that's a tough, I mean, I just, that there's like a 3 to 4 week stretch from when they leave for that West Coast trip. Then even when they come back, you know, two of those home games are going to be against Boston, two games in the span of 3 days. You've got then two on the road before that against Toronto. Pretty tough. Like that's a pretty, pretty tough part of the schedule. I do think the NBA getting more of those sort of like consecutive, you know, game versus the same opponent is sort of interesting. Charlotte has those with, like I said, Toronto, Boston, but before that with Miami, both games on the road in early November. So that'll be early to mid-November. That'll be tough. Home and home versus Cleveland in the middle of March, like right around March Madness. That's not going to be, you know, assuming the Cavs are healthier at this point of the season than they were a year ago. That's going to be really tough. Road, home with Dallas, and then home with Toronto again. So those are tough teams to be sort of like thrown into the blender with a scheduling tactic that we've seen before, but perhaps not, maybe not quite with this much regularity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a little interesting, I think. But yeah, no, I think there are certainly some strengths to the Hornets schedule, like getting to cut down on the amount of back-to-backs. I'm not sure how many games they have they'll have the rest advantage. I know there's one site that always crunches the number on those, but I haven't looked into that yet. So yeah, I just think this one stretch, and luckily I guess it's ahead of the trade deadline, but the West Coast trip into this, like, you know, the first 2 weeks of January is just like a really fascinating part of the schedule for me. But I think it's interesting that they still have a couple of national televised games. I really do think that speaks to the power of LaMelo, like the interest in LaMelo Ball, because I don't think there's a, I mean, we're obviously like, you know, we cover this team, we follow this team. The people who listen to this podcast care a great deal about this team, but I'm not sure how much, like whatever sort of like national appeal it felt like they were sort of having as like a team on like an upward trend. The trend line's looking good the last two seasons. I feel like that has probably dissipated some this offseason. Like they're not a team that's going to be like in discussions to, like, you know, make the playoffs in the East, I don't think. I mean, I guess we'll see. But I just think it speaks to LaMelo and how he is an incredibly good young basketball player who I think might be celebrating a birthday right around today or tomorrow or something like that. Either way. But also just sort of like the appeal he has and as like a growing young talent that's had cameras on and gyms he's played basketball in for a long, long time. And that'll obviously continue this season with a couple nationally televised games.
Yeah, I looked that up the other day, Brian, about the rest advantage, disadvantage, or just having the same amount of rest. Hornets do not, or they're kind of like in the bottom tier when it comes to rest advantage. They're more often going to be either even with the team or at a disadvantage. other thing too, like, you know, I'm not too bummed. Like, I feel like people get so upset that the Hornets are the only team that have not made it to the a game on Christmas. Not that they deserved it this year by any means, but like my viewing on that day just is so sporadic because I'm going from house to house and just I don't have time to sit down and watch Christmas basketball. That's just me.
I actually kind of like that around Christmas, like college basketball shuts down for like a week. And the Hornets usually don't have a game on Christmas. So for me, it's like, all right, like I get to just like sit on the couch and like casually watch the games. You know, I'm not having to like, all right, I'm gonna have to rewatch this later or take notes or something like that. So yeah.
I'm with you, Richie. Yeah. Christmas games. I mean, I understand why the league prioritizes it. I mean, but for me, it's just on in the background. Like I'm not locked in. I'm like chasing kids and trying to having conversations with family members. So yeah, I don't have time to watch games on Christmas. Not at this point in time in my life.
No, if you have kids, you have multiple houses to go to, it's almost impossible. It's just background. I actually watch probably Thanksgiving football more just because you're just kind of like passed out on the couch, just can't move type of thing.
Exactly.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so here's what we're going to do is we are going to pretend that there is going to be an expansion team that is coming. There have been rumors in the NBA about expanding to places like Seattle or Vegas. I'm assuming if they did expand, they'd probably have to do it by two to make it an even 32-team league. So we're going to have a fun activity here where we get to protect eight players on the roster in this hypothetical team that they just could not draft. I think when they do this, though, it happens pre-free agency, but we're going to go ahead and just kind of work with this anyway. So it's obviously post-free agency, post-draft. I'm not sure how two ways work in expansion drafts, but we're going to include Bryce McGowan's in the crop of players that we can decide if we want to protect or not. So the way that we're going to do this is we're going to first talk about the players that we really are like surefire and gave little to no thought to in terms of making this an easy decision to protect these players so that an opponent couldn't pick them in the expansion draft. And obviously there's one that I think everyone can assume who the Hornets would protect. So I'm going to go ahead and get that out of the way with LaMelo Ball. This is like the easiest decision because he is the cornerstone of this franchise and replacing him would be something very difficult to do. He's got the chance to be a perennial all-star. He's got the chance to improve, obviously, on his weaknesses as he progresses through his NBA career. Like, I can see that rim finishing, that on-ball defense. There's no reason why that wouldn't improve as he progresses through his career. So there's no reason why he wouldn't be protected there. So even though he's the easiest decision, there's a couple other players that I have here that I really just kind of immediately thought to in terms for the Hornets to protect. That would also be PJ Washington and Mark Williams. Washington is younger. You have some control over him. You can extend him, or you can just, you know, obviously next season he's a restricted free agent. So match any offer that comes his way. I know he hasn't truly popped yet. I know Brian, probably compared to you, Spencer, is a little bit higher on him, but his versatility on both ends, his potential to grow makes this an easier decision for me. And then Mark Williams, obviously, he just was your first round pick that you hope turns into a two-way impact center. And he's obviously shown that clear impact on defense, protecting shots, altering shots. He just needs time to develop his offensive game. So he's a top 15 pick. You would definitely not leave that guy unprotected. So those three players, Ball, Washington, and Williams, are the three players that I kind of gave little thought to, and I went ahead and just protected them right away. So Spencer, I will go to you first.
Yeah, well, so, you know, as you laid out, we're kind of tiering these. So no thought. I had those same three players, but I also had one additional player, and I'll kind of let me back up. I guess I'll talk about how I thought about this. I mean, you kind of touched on it with Mark Williams. Like, you have control over him in terms of young players on your roster more than any other player on the roster. So Mark Williams belongs there ahead of, say, a James Booknight, because maybe some people are like, well, why isn't Booknight in this tier?
Right.
Because you have more control and Williams is younger. I have Terry Rozier in this tier too for the same kind of reason. You know, he's under contract long term. And not that he would be maybe one of the first three actual players on this roster that I would prioritize, but I prioritize keeping the asset, right? You know, I mean, you've got him under contract for, you know, for 3 or 4 more years. And I think at a pretty good number, if he can remain one of the best catch and shoot, you know, bombers in the league, with some off the dribble chops. So I just think the Hornets can recoup some kind of value from Rozier at some point. So I have him in this tier as well. You know, I think you said it well, and we already touched on Mark Williams. You know, we got to see him in summer league, but like, what have we really seen so far when he's playing with LaMelo Ball? We're going to see the true Mark Williams, what he can bring, you know, offensively. I think defensively, we know he's going to give this team a boost, should at least immediately, as a rim protector. LaMelo Ball, I mean, what do you really need to say there? That's an obvious one. And then PJ Washington, you know, that's probably the conversation we should have, you know, the most meat on the bone and try to pick at a little bit, because, you know, he's not under contract long-term in Charlotte. It's coming up on a decision year for the Hornets. He's been involved in a lot of trade conversations and rumors, with the Hornets. And I think it's safe to say he has been discussed in real trades, by Mitch Kupchak. So, but I think we all agree here, and I certainly know Brian agrees, that PJ Washington should probably be a cornerstone of this roster moving forward. The question of does he have all-star potential, I think, has probably been answered. I'm not sure PJ Washington has all-star potential, but just what he gives this team and how good of a fit he is with LaMelo Ball as just a spacing five, a small ball five, you know, how versatile he's shown he can be on defense. I just think it's time for Charlotte to probably commit to Washington, right? Like, we might know his ceiling is a little lower than we thought maybe it could be a year and a half, 2 years ago, but he's still a really, really solid NBA player. I think the Hornets can re-sign him on a pretty decent contract. And again, just like Rozier, Richie, I was making the case of why he belongs in this tier. Like, re-sign Washington. I think the price is going to be decent. Retain the asset and hopefully get something. I mean, if it doesn't work out long-term, you can certainly trade him at some point and get something back. But he's the most interesting, I guess, of these three or four players we've discussed in this first tier.
Yeah, so you got Ball, Washington, Williams like me, but you've also added Rozier. So the reason I didn't put Rozier in this tier, it could be an opportunity for the Hornets to get off his contract. Obviously, you would not be getting anything back, but if they think they wanted to free up long-term space, he's the one player that is the longest when it comes to the Hornets books here. So that would be the one opportunity if you want to kind of take that strategy of, hey, let me entice an expansion team to take this contract off of our hands. We would not get anything in return, but they would also have to eat that money as they assumed his contract.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a fair way to look at it too. I just see like Rozier, I mean, he's not on like some, you know, $35 million a year max contract. Right. And he provides such a valuable utility to a contender like the Lakers or, I mean, the Clippers. Think of some of these West Coast teams that just need a little boost in shooting, you know, over the next 2 to 3 years and feel like they're one move away from making the championship. Like, I think the Hornets, I think they can recoup some pretty good return by flipping him. And I still don't think this contract is crazy. And that he's that overpaid. So I just assume retain that asset. And look, at some point, I mean, the Hornets, like, they're still trying to win too. Like, they still need some veterans on this team. Hayward's coming off the book sooner than people realize. So I'm putting Rozier here just to retain the asset.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to this, like, next tier, a crop of players that you kind of gave a little bit of thought to when protecting them, but it wasn't as an easy decision as the players that we just mentioned. And I actually only have one player in this tier where I was like giving some thought to, but it was somewhat of an easy decision, and that was Cody Martin for me. He just signed a pretty reasonable deal. I think 4 years, $32 million. I think if you believe in his value like the front office does, it makes sense to protect him. It's not a surefire decision like LaMelo or PJ or Mark Williams or Rozier in your case. But if you needed to get off this guy, he'd be a very movable piece down the road if that was the case. But he's very much a plug and play player that all teams could use. You know, we love his defensive presence, his impact, his deflections, his steals, his hustle and his energy and all that type of stuff that you get from this guy on a nightly basis. Offensively, he's still developing. Yes, he's just kind of had 1 year of shooting from behind the arc at a pretty efficient clip, but maybe there's something more you can tap into. And then obviously he's got that desire and want to get to the rim as well. So the reason I only have one player in this tier is because my next group of players I really debated over and I was like flip-flopping back and forth. So really the only player that I have kind of like in this next tier where I gave a little bit of thought to, but not too much, was Cody Martin. So Spencer, I'm going to pass it to you in terms of which players you would protect next.
Well, this is fun because I think we thought about this exercise differently. We're going to have similar players, but so I have three players in this tier, and then I actually only have one in the last tier. So I like that we're kind of differing on how we approach this. So Cody Martin, that is, you know, where I'm starting. Just where the one player you had in this tier, you know, the Hornets just signed him to a new contract, so you know they're moving forward with him. Great two-way utility wing, you know, in this league. He's proven that he's a real NBA player, great defensive player, you know, probably the best on-ball defensive player on this roster, just in terms of being able to keep the ball in front, stay in front of his man, be physical, not get overpowered around the basket. So that's probably where you start with Cody Martin. And then, you know, can he continue to improve as a shooter? Shooting is going to be the swing skill for this guy. This guy, you know, it feels like you say that all the time with wings in the NBA. But truly, like if Cody Martin can become a better catch and shoot player, he's a really useful NBA wing because of his defensive chops. And then, you know, we've seen he played point guard in college. He's grown up playing with the ball in his hand. So if you need him to make a play as like a third option on the floor with the ball in his hands, he's capable of doing it. So, you know, Cody Martin definitely belongs in this tier. The second guy I have is James Bouknight. He is a what's the word I'm looking for? He's a debated player on this roster, I think. Yep. I think a lot of fans are very confused about what his role is moving forward. Maybe confused as you know, to his personality type, what kind of guy he is, how bad does he want it? You know, he hasn't had the smoothest of rides since he's been in the NBA, but he belongs here. You know, the Hornets drafted him in the lottery a little over a year ago. He's a key piece for this roster moving forward. I still think they have to prioritize him and help him mature on and off the court. You know, these young players on this roster, there's a lot of them, and not many of them seem to be developing and breaking in the right direction like we would hope. But, you know, we cannot – Book Knight's got to play this year. He's got to play. We cannot lose hope. We cannot push him down the priority list. And that's going to be something I'm watching closely with Steve Clifford. You know, we know his past with young players, not trusting them, the Malik Monk experience. We can't have that same movie happen with James Book Knight. And I really hope that communication is very clear between front office and coach, because I think this is a big year for Book Knight and the Hornets. The other guy I have here, which I had to think about pretty tough, but you traded a future first round pick to draft him. So Kai Jones, I think, just has to be here. Like, you know, I'm losing hope. He still seems like a baby fawn running around out there, not really knowing much of what he's doing yet. Doesn't have a great feel for the game, tries to play kind of out of his scope, I would say, often. But his fit, you know, this guy's athleticism is just over the moon. And if he can just rein in the idea of do less, like focus on your strengths. Your strength is rim running. Your strength is being a weak side rim protector. Just try to rein it in. I mean, cast it in a little bit. He tries to do too much so often. So it's a big year for Kai. And again, Richie, the main reason I put him here is the Hornets traded back up into the first round of the draft, you know, two drafts ago to go get this guy. So just thinking about what they gave up, he's got to be prioritized, right? So he's got to belong in this. He's got to belong in this second tier. So to kind of recap, Cody Martin, like you had, and then I'm going with the two second year guys that we got to see something from this year because of where they were drafted by Charlotte. And last thing I would add, Richie, is like, you know, Book Knight, they drafted in the lottery, right? So he obviously is a priority, but it's been a really long time since Charlotte traded up and back up into the first round, like got that aggressive with their drafting strategy to build this roster moving forward. So just considering that, I just remember that night just being like, wow, this is an aggressive draft for Charlotte. I like it. They said, we really like this guy, Kai Jones. We like his potential. We know he's going to be a project, but you know, we're going to draft him here, even though the consensus thinks really he's probably a 30 to 40 ranked guy. Like, this is our guy. We're going to go get him. We don't care where, you know, what the masses, you know, think about him or where they think he belongs. So just in terms of thinking about the aggressive strategy, like he's still got to be a real big priority, right?
Yeah, and he's on my next tier. So this last tier that we're going to get to are the players, at least in my view, that could have gone unprotected, but at the last second, I decided to go ahead and protect them. So I will start with Kai Jones. He is on this tier for me in terms of protecting him from this expansion draft. Like you mentioned, he's one of those guys that they got aggressive with him. He was a project. He didn't really start playing basketball until like 5-6 years ago. So there's a lot to tap into, a lot of potential there. I know that's a key buzzword that people like to throw around a lot, but he really just doesn't have a lot of experience. And hopefully getting him, you know, into an NBA team, an organization, they can kind of draw out some of his strengths, high flyer, pick and roll, big lob threat. There's not many lob threats on this team. Mark Williams was just drafted too, but he's kind of like a different type of lob threat to me. Like Kai Jones is just so bouncy. His shot has not really developed, and that's something that maybe it may never develop with this guy, but the versatility that you get out of this guy on both ends of the court is something that made me ultimately protect this guy. And to your point, I wasn't even thinking about this, the fact that they traded up for him, but now that I think about it, like, that makes sense. Why would you let this guy go unprotected if you spent all this draft capital to trade up to get Kai Jones? So Kai Jones would be another player that I would protect. James Book Knight is in this tier for me. I think the injury over the summer probably didn't make this decision easy for me. I think I probably would have had him in one tier above this, but because I didn't get to see him play in summer league, because his rookie season was a lot of up and down. He played a lot in Greensboro. When he got here in Charlotte, there was really only a couple games that he flashed in. There are some issues with him over dribbling and, you know, not making quick decisions in an offense that is predicated on quick decisions. I'm still interested to see what his role is with this team and how they best utilize him. Brian always talks about using him as an off-ball player, but what we saw mostly from him in his days in Greensboro and Charlotte was more of an on-ball player, creator type. So James Bouknight, Kai Jones would fall in this tier. Now, these last two players, I really, really debated, and I was going back and forth on who to protect, who to unprotect. I'm actually going to go Bryce McGowan's. I know that kind of seems weird to protect a second-round player, but they did trade up for him too as well. So when you think about that in terms of having faith in this guy and having a higher rank on him than where he actually went in the draft, he showed some flashes in summer league with the on-ball creation and getting his own shot and getting to the rim, and even some small flashes of passing the ball too. Like, he was not necessarily a ball stopper when it comes to his overall style of his game. I actually thought he got worse as summer league progressed, but you know, it's summer league. So, and then finally, so this is where I debated between Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, and Jalen McDaniels in terms of who was my last player to protect. I understand the Terry Rozier having control over him for many years, but my strategy was, hey, let's see if any team will take him, and if they don't, we still have him type of thing. But I actually went Gordon Hayward. I think the reason I chose Gordon Hayward over Jalen McDaniels and Rozier, or more specifically McDaniels, just because McDaniels' contract is going to be up after this year, and you just never know what his future is going to be on this team with the bevy of wings and forwards that the Hornets do have. And Gordon Hayward, while injury prone, you at least have control over him for next year, and maybe they can find a plan where they can manage his injuries and not play him as often, load management style with Gordon, because I still think he's a productive player when he is healthy. I know that's a big if. So let me go ahead and get my eight players from the top here in terms of who I protected. We've got LaMelo Ball, PJ Washington, Mark Williams in my first tier. I had Cody Martin in my second tier. And then my last four players that I protected were Kai Jones, Bryce McGowan's, Bouknight, and Hayward. And overall strategy, Spencer and Brian, was just to kind of lean heavily on the young pieces, especially those that you had team control over, and kind of leave out those aging veterans or maybe ones that have undesirable contracts unprotected. So, Spencer, I'm going to pass it to you over this last tier, the ones that you debated over a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, yeah, interesting that Rozier did not make your eight at all. I think we thought about this much differently, which is good. I mean, that makes for interesting banter, right? Richie, like you said earlier, and maybe the reason, you know, you didn't really include Rozier, you know, try to get an expansion team to come in and take that money off your hands. I would personally rather a team take Gordon Hayward's money, even though it's shorter time, off my hands again, so that I could retain that Rozier asset and try to flip him at some point for something, you know. I understand where you're coming from too. So my last tier, again, it was one player since I had three players in that middle tier. So I debated between a few guys. Jalen McDaniels, JT Thor are really the two that it came down to. I thought about Bryce McGowan's, but not real seriously. I mean, he's super young. I wasn't real impressed with what I saw in summer league, but I'm very interested to watch him in Greensboro this year and check out his development. I think he's got a ways to go. So those are kind of the three guys that I debated about for this last spot. But again, it was really came down to McDaniels and Thor. Ultimately, I went with Thor here. He's got a long ways to go too. Wasn't impressed. Was actually disappointed in his summer league as a second year player performance, to be honest. But you know, he's younger. The Hornets, you know, they've got contract flexibility on him. You know, he was a second round pick, so it gets a little sticky on how you would extend Thor, but he's not going to cost you a lot. Like you have him, you have his rights. You know, so really you can pay this guy what you want to pay him. You, whatever you need to do to keep him, the Hornets can do. He's the younger of McDaniels and himself. Jalen McDaniels is very clearly the better player at this point, but Jalen McDaniels is just he's so thin. And he's improved as a shooter. I think that he has improved as a defensive player, but ultimately I kind of think that he's just got I think we can kind of see where his ceiling is as a player. And I think he's an NBA rotational wing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I still think that JT Thor has a chance to have some on-ball chops, to become a better shooter, to be a better kind of disrupting defender than I think Jalen McDaniels can be. And again, he's younger. So I just think you need to double down on things like that. So I gave this last spot to Thor.
Very good. All right, so Brian is back. He took a phone call here, so we've got him back in the fold here. So, Brian, what we were doing was tiering the players in terms of how you would protect them. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it to you for your first tier. Who are the players that really you just didn't think too hard about and you went ahead and protected them?
Yeah, there's going to be a fair amount of overlap here. And apologies for the disruption. I had a phone call I had to take there. But, I think you could almost argue that, LaMelo is almost in a tier of his own at this point, but I went LaMelo, PJ Washington, especially just given how important he is to this current roster, how well he pairs with LaMelo going forward, assuming he is part of sort of like the long term or at least intermediate term projections for this team. And then Mark Williams, the guys that I picked, it's pretty heavily slanted towards similar to you guys, like youth, a lot of the guys I picked or protected are all guys that were drafted, 2019 through 2022 pretty much. So, I can move on to the second tier if you want me to.
Yeah. So this is the tier that you kind of gave a little bit of thought to, but was still kind of an easy decision.
Yeah. So a little bit of thought to, ended up putting, Cody Martin. And, I think I would put, I think I would actually go ahead and put Book Knight into this section as well. Just only 1 year removed from being a lottery pick. I wasn't crazy about Book Knight as a prospect coming out of UConn, though I did like him a decent amount. There were some flashes with the Hornets last season, albeit, he only played 200-300 minutes for the team. And I pulled this stat the other day, but Book Knight had, it was like almost 18% of his 2-point attempts were blocked this past season, which was easily the highest on the roster, and something that's going to just drastically need to improve. So I would put Book Knight there as well, though, just because I think Charlotte, looking at this roster, like they need secondary playmaking. They need anyone that can, kind of crack a defense off a dribble outside of LaMelo. And so I'll go Book Knight there as well.
And then the last tier we had was the players that could have gone unprotected and you kind of had to debate over a little bit more. So who are those for you?
Yeah, Thor, like JT Thor starts that off. Like he did not, outside of the last game of Summer League, last game in Vegas, JT Thor actually played quite well. I want to lean more heavily on how I evaluated him as a prospect, in which I liked him a good bit coming out of Auburn. Richie, I remember you and I did like a video breakdown pod on him probably last summer, and he had some really nice flashes as an off-ball wing, fourth or fifth option for Charlotte, guarding, some tough perimeter assignments last season, being an offensive rebounder, being a cutter. So I still like Thor's upside as a guy that can slip and pop and pick and pop and can attack closeouts and has lots of length. And again, he's still incredibly young for a guy that's heading into his second year, but no doubt the run out in Vegas was not super encouraging. I also will protect Kai Jones in this spot. Richie, I think you and Lee and I did a pod a few weeks ago on Kai, sort of talking about the performance out in Vegas, or maybe Spencer, actually, I think you were here for that one. But regardless, like, we all know the holes with Kai's defense. His tweener status is a guy that can't really like fully protect the rim, is going to have trouble anchoring a defense, but is also going to have trouble being a guy that's, either being the low man helper or chasing guys around the perimeter, just guarding in space. The third guy I have here, like, it's tough. I kind of wanted to put Jalen McDaniels because I think he has the chance to be a rotation player. I think he deserves more playing time this season. And I guess a guy, someone like Kelly Oubre might be in the way, might be an impediment a little bit for that. But I would like to see more Jalen McDaniels playing time. But I'm going to end up protecting Bryce McGowan's and just sort of like lean in a little bit on the shot creation aspect. But that's tough. That was like a coin toss for me between McGowan's and McDaniels, because while I think you would like to see Jalen maybe bulk up a little bit, and that way he could, you know, maybe add a little bit more sort of like on ball versatility as a defender. He does a lot of stuff defensively. And again, I think is like a guy that's playable in a postseason setting. So I don't know. If I talked about this longer to myself, I might flip it. So let me just shut up now and say Bryce McGowan's. But McDaniels was the toughest call for me here.
I think it's interesting because both of you guys approached it in terms of like the Rozier Hayward didn't make Brian's cut. Brian, I actually had Rozier in my first tier, and the reasoning was, you know, not the youth, not investing long term, but he is under contract long term at Charlotte. And I do think, like, I would probably rather take the chance on whatever future asset I'm getting by trading Rozier at some point.
Yeah. Fair.
Over Bryce McGowan's, right? Does that make sense? Like, yeah, or even over a JT Thor. Like, I think that it's not out of the question that Charlotte could get a future first round pick for him. And like I was explaining to Richie, I just think Rozier, like, the closer he gets 2 years out to the end of that contract, if he can remain one of the best catch and shoot bombers, you know, in the league, like, yeah, he gives a contender such a valuable utility that I really do think the Hornets can still trade him for something that, to me, like, I would rather bet on that asset they're getting back again over a McGowan's or maybe even a Thor. So that's kind of why I prioritized him higher up.
I think that's a great, I see the logic there completely. I wish there was like a little less runway, you know what I mean? But it does seem like where Terry is now, barring some, you know, bad injury, it does feel like he's sort of like has found, I don't know, like kind of like a baseline level of production on offense, which is an impressive floor for him. Like, cause he is truly one of the best off ball movement shooters in the NBA. And I don't want to like, I think sometimes when it comes to evaluating Rozier, I struggle a little bit because of the defensive concerns, because of some of the on-ball limitations, now because of the contract structure. But like, make no mistake, like, this is a guy that you can run offense through. The Hornets did often for three seasons with Rozier and James Borrego, a guy that you can design offense for with his ability to run around screens and be incredibly versatile in how he can catch and shoot and get those looks off. So I think, I agree. I think he is a guy that could have at some point during this contract still have, you know, positive, if not relatively decent value as a trade asset.
Not to get like too deep in the weeds in Rozier, but I've just thought recently, you know, as these rosters have turned over in the summer, like a team like the Clippers, like, yeah, like if they come out of the gates and they're, let's say, ranked 22nd to 25th in the league, like 3-point shooting wise, with all those defensive wings they have, like, Rozier is the perfect shot in the arm to improve their shooting, number one. But all those wings they have defensively, like, his defensive limitations are now completely covered up. So, you know, in the context of just how he could fit and what he could provide a team. Anyways, while we're on the conversation, I've kind of fallen in love with Rozier in a Clippers uniform, and I'm wondering what they would pay to get him if they struggle to shoot, you know, early in this season or the next season, right?
You kicked around the Rozier to the Clips hypothetical for even before the extension. Like, do you remember the, like, Rozier Kennard hypothetical trade you had at some point? Yeah, that was pretty, sure. That was like a pretty, that I don't remember what all the parameters of it were, but I actually liked that deal quite a bit. I mean, I think it was like, you know, the principles were Rozier and Kennard with, like, the, you know, the Hornets getting a pick back. I'm not sure how the how the numbers break down on that, assuming, you know, obviously Terry's due in line for a raise this season, though.
All right, let's look at our unprotected players real quick before we wrap. So Plumlee was unanimous. We unprotected Richards. We unprotected Oubre. McDaniels was also unprotected by us. And then okay. Rozier and Hayward, two of us unprotected them. So let me ask you this question real quick. If there was an expansion team in Seattle, which of these players that we left unprotected do you think that they would probably go after first? I personally think, in my opinion, it would probably be Rozier or McDaniels. Those are the two that I'm kind of eyeing right now. So to Spencer's point, maybe it would be better to protect Rozier because at that point you'd be getting him, you know, you'd be letting him leave for nothing. But again, my thought process was because he is on the books for so long, it would be an easy way for them to get off of him. So I think those two players would probably be the ones that teams and expansion team might look at first. Oubre and Plumlee, they have a 1-year deal, so there's not much control over them. And then Richards is Richards, and then Hayward's got the injury concern. So I think that's probably where teams would lean.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I just think like Rozier is scoring and shooting. And I think, you know, context is certainly important with those numbers, but it's tough. You know, it's undeniable. The guy has scored a lot of points the last three seasons with the Hornets. He's made a lot of three pointers. He can be kind of a tough shot maker. And so it seems like an easy guy that you could put on an expansion roster and he would just give you usage and scoring and 3-point shooting. McDaniels, the hometown kid, right from Seattle, I believe. So, and again, just because he is a rotation player, likely in the NBA, he's a wing with size and some defensive impact. He can play on anybody's roster. So yeah, my guess would be those two would be highlighted. I suppose you could make a case for Hayward as well, just because he is scoring and playmaking and a guy that can run pick and roll, and you can theoretically run an offense through. Rozier, you can kind of squint and do that with as well. It's just a little bit different in terms of like what those play designs look like for off-ball movement shots versus Hayward, who's a guy who you can use as a screener to create mismatches. You can have him run the pick and roll. He can isolate in the mid-range. You can post up, all that sorts of stuff. So I think those three are sort of the no-brainers for that. But I would probably tier it Rozier, McDaniels, and Hayward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are all over it. I think Rozier and Hayward, too, like for an expansion team, you need somebody you can put on promotional materials, right? And like Hayward and Rozier are both guys that can score between 15 and 20 points per game, you know, in different ways, of course. But yeah, they're just marketable players for a team that's going to stink, and you still got to sell a few jerseys and do that kind of stuff. So McDaniels, yeah, it's a good point. You know, he would be a hometown guy, you know, in Seattle. So, but I would say like tier wise of these unprotected players, I would put Hayward and Rozier in the first, and then McDaniels kind of as a let's go ahead and draft this guy and get him plugged into our system and see if we can, you know, get the most out of him and keep him as a long-term guy. Whereas Hayward and Rozier would just be like, we need a veteran. We need somebody to put on a poster, right? They can score for us. So let's start there. We know we're going to stink anyways. That's probably how I would tier those two.
All right, as we wrap, make sure you guys have given us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcast, and take a look into BuzzBeat Plus for ad-free episodes and early access to episodes. I'll put a link in the episode notes. Oh, also, Brian, let the listeners know what you and Lee got going on for an upcoming episode before we sign off here.
Yeah. So we're doing more draft pods, and we've got another one coming up where we're continuing to focus on returning college prospects. We haven't gotten into one and done guys yet for the upcoming season, but returning guys. So this next pod, we're going to talk about Arthur Kaluma out of Creighton. We're going to talk about Andre Jackson from UConn, Maxwell Lewis from Pepperdine, who's been kind of quickly rising up draft boards a little bit here and there. And then there's one more person we're doing. There's one more person, I believe. Oh, Matthew Morrell from Ole Miss is another person that's going to be a part of this. But we're going to do more of those sort of like breakdown prospect pods. And then not the next episode, but the one after that, we are going to do sort of like a singular deep dive on Scoot Henderson, getting ready to start his second season in the G League. I've seen probably about 5 or 6 full Scoot games now. I am incredibly impressed. Certainly a guy that I think is going to land at 1 or 2, most likely 2 on draft boards. It seems like Victor Wembanyama has the number 1 spot locked up for 2023, but Scoot is an incredible lead guard prospect And I'm looking forward to sort of doing like a deep dive on a prospect who, look, if things go really south for the Hornets this season, Scoot is a guy that I don't think the fit is like perfectly clean with LaMelo, but Scoot did show he could play off the ball this season playing with, you know, Jaden Hardy and Dyson Daniels in the G League. And is a guy that would certainly help the rim pressure concerns for the Hornets. So anyways, those are the two draft pods we have coming up. It's going to be college prospects followed by a Scoot Henderson deep dive.
Very good. Well, stay tuned for that. For Spencer, for Brian, I'm Richie. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we will talk to you guys later.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.